This is VOA News via remote. I'm Laurel Bowman. Pope Francis is backing a call by the United Nations for a global ceasefire to allow the world to focus on fighting the coronavirus pandemic instead. Saying the disease knows no borders, Francis appealed to everyone to stop every form of bellicose hostility and choose instead paths towards humanitarian help, diplomatic efforts, and attention to those most vulnerable. More than 669,300 people have been infected by the coronavirus across the world, and more than 30,980 people have died. About a third of the deaths have been in Italy. The death toll in that country climbed by 756 to 10,779, the Civil Protection Agency said Sunday, the second successive fall in the daily rate. Another extremely hard-hit country, Spain, is reporting the highest daily rise so far in coronavirus fatalities, 838 deaths in 24 hours. European Affairs Minister Amélie de Montchalin said Sunday that how the European Union responds to the coronavirus outbreak will determine its credibility and utility. These comments came after the bloc failed to agree last week on measures to cushion the economic blow from the pandemic. The minister said Europe's populist parties would be the winners if EU leaders failed to act together during this major crisis. Meanwhile, in Australia, gatherings will be restricted to just two people, down from 10 starting Monday. Also, all playgrounds, outdoor gyms, and skate parks will be closed across the country. The Prime Minister said all citizens over 70 years old, as well as Indigenous people over 50 years old, are strongly advised to self-isolate at home. These are the Australians deemed most vulnerable. This is VOA News. Some 8 hours after stunning the New York metropolitan region with a proposal to place it under quarantine, U.S. President Donald Trump decides against imposing a broad lockdown. His reversal comes on the same day as the U.S. death toll tops 2,100, more than doubling in just 3 days. Of the fatalities, more than a quarter are in New York City. UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson is writing to every household in the United Kingdom to urge people to stay home and follow the rules amid the coronavirus outbreak. The letter from Johnson, who tested positive for the virus, warns Britain that things will get worse before they get better, as he urged people to stay indoors and slow the spread. The letter, being delivered to 30 million homes this week, will be accompanied by a leaflet spelling out that and more advice. The 55-year-old leader has been accused of failing to follow the British government's distancing measures himself after he and other UK leaders began self-isolating with virus symptoms. South Korea and Japan said that North Korea Sunday fired two suspected ballistic missiles into the sea. This, they say, continues a streak of weapons launches, suggesting North Korean leader Kim Jong-un is trying to strengthen domestic support amid worries about a possible coronavirus outbreak in his country. Taiwan's foreign minister, Joseph Wu, tweeted this weekend that reporters from the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, and the Washington Post are welcome on his democratic island. Taiwan's invitation to American journalists feeling harassed by China to locate there in Taiwan instead would free them from Chinese government pressure, but distance them from Asia's hub for international news. Chinese authorities last week expelled several top reporters, and China threw out three other reporters in February because of a news headline calling China a sick man of Asia due to its COVID-19 outbreak. The husband of a jailed British-Iranian aid worker says his wife has had her temporary prison release extended for 2 more weeks by the Iranian government. Nazanin Zaghari Ratcliffe, currently on leave from prison and at her parents' home in Tehran, was to return to custody on April 4th. In September 2016, she was sentenced to 5 years in prison for allegedly plotting to topple the Iranian government. She denies the charges. Her husband said she was among roughly 80,000 prisoners temporarily released by the Iranian government, a measure authorities said was meant to curb the COVID-19 outbreak. Iran is the hardest hit country in the Middle East by the coronavirus pandemic, with more than 38,300 confirmed cases. This is VOA News via remote. I'm Laurel Bowman from Washington.
and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington. Opposed to Guinea's recent referendum are rejecting the outcome of the poll. Civil society and opposition parties say they will continue with efforts to pressure President Alpha Condé to step down after his second and final year term expires. This despite the outcome of last week's poll, which showed a majority of Guineans support the constitutional amendments. Attorney Thiano Sulemani Balde, a member of the opposition group, the National Front for the Defense of the Constitution, and president of the board of the Research Institute on Democracy and Rule of Law, tells me opposition and civil society groups plan to unveil a series of nationwide actions to continue to pressure President Condé and his administration to step down at the end of his second and final year term. This, he says, will come after the country successfully addresses challenges of the coronavirus pandemic.
We are not surprised by this result, since we knew from the beginning what will be the result given by the Electoral Commission. When the government says it's 91% of the Guinean people said yes, and we have more than 60% of participation, it doesn't make any sense, because everyone knows even half of the population didn't vote on Sunday. And even on those places where people went to vote, for example, in here in Conakry, in Kaloum, there were so many people who were opposed to the referendum. But we know the government is not looking for any credibility. Their only objective is to pass this referendum so that the president can represent himself for a third term.
Thiano, some political analysts that I spoke with are saying that the opposition and civil society groups erred in a big way by not participating in this referendum to reject it as you had anticipated. Not participating in it, they said, gives the government the opportunity to change the constitution to how it wants it to be. What's your response to this?
You know, there was no way for the opposition political party and the civil society to participate in this election when we knew from the beginning what would be the result. We have the electoral list. Everyone have seen how the government managed to have more than 8 million voters in a population of 12 million, which, you know, cannot happen in any given country, particularly in Africa, where we know the majority of the population are younger than the old one, and the majority of them are less than, you know, 8 years old. Even the government recognized the electoral list had so many issues. So if they wanted to organize credible elections, they could have complied with the law, make sure that we have a transparent and credible electoral list before going to the election. Other than that, we also know even during these elections, even 5% of the population were not able to go to vote, and they didn't vote. So there is no way the government can convince anyone that this election was credible.
Thiano, now that your opposition, including civil society groups and opposition political parties, move appeared not to have worked, what is your next line of action in view of the fact that the constitutional amendment referendum has gone through? It has received an overwhelming support. Now the government has the opportunity to amend the constitution to how it wants it to operate. What's next for you?
Let me correct you. This constitution didn't receive an overwhelming support from the Guinean people. Yes, the Electoral Commission with the order coming from the president have given false result. Everyone knows about that. Other than that, you know, this is a very long struggle. We knew this is not going to end last Sunday. We are going to keep the struggle until this president is out of power. There is no way we will recognize this constitution. There is no way we will let him have a third term here in Guinea. It has been almost 10 years now. We have been suffering. Enough is enough. We have lost more than 150 young Guineans who have lost their life. We cannot afford to have more Guinean people losing their life with a corruption system which deny the Guinean the basic public services that they need to survive. So the struggle is just beginning, and we will continue until he is out of power.
Do you have any strategic measures that you plan on taking in association with opposition political parties about your next line of action in this struggle that you clearly define as putting pressure on President Alpha Condé and his administration to leave, which you say is a move unconstitutional?
Let me tell you, even today, as we are speaking right now, there are so many demonstrations in several countries in Guinea because people don't accept this result. Other than that, we will keep organizing demonstration. The only issue right now with the coronavirus, we have to think about the health of the Guineans. So it's going to be difficult for us to organize massive demonstration, taking into account the risk linked to the propagation of the virus. But once again, this is not just the Guinean people who are concerned about the willingness of the president to stay in power for life. You have seen so far the reaction coming from the European Union, the ECOWAS community, the international community, French, US, and so on. There are several decisions which will be made in the coming weeks. But once again, the struggle will continue. And when the time comes, we will make public the different actions that will be taken.
Attorney Thieno Sulemani Balde is a member of the opposition coalition group, the National Front for the Defense of the Constitution, and president of the board of the Research Institute on Democracy and Rule of Law. He spoke with me from the Guinean capital, Conakry. Fako Mashueshue, the chairperson for Lesotho's ruling All Basotho Convention, or ABC, parliamentary caucus, says he welcomes the announcement of a countrywide lockdown beginning Sunday. Announcing the restriction, Prime Minister Thomas Thabane says the action will last for 21 days. It's part of a precautionary measure his administration is implementing to combat the spread of the coronavirus. It also comes as neighboring South Africa has imposed restrictions to stop the spread of the disease. Meanwhile, the army and the police have been deployed to enforce the lockdown. This after the health ministry issued restrictions saying travelers from COVID-19 affected countries will be kept in isolation for 14 days upon arrival. Fako Moshoeshwe tells me the Kingdom of Lesotho's mountainous landscape makes it difficult to quarantine the public.
Yes, I've told you that really we as a parliamentarians, our hands are tired because now we have asked the government to withdraw the prorogation, as you are aware that Lesotho Parliament has been prorogued. So actually, I'm working this in a capacity of NEPACOR. So I've contacted one of foundations which is assisting me to get to find a donor funder so that we can help us maybe with software that you can be able to each and every to each and everyone who has a smartphone can be able to access each and every information so that we can have something like a tops there, something like a dashboard. So meaning that in that dashboard, all the communicated things which need to be communicated or even the information should be delivered to each and every smartphone. But I'm working on that, but we're waiting for the government to sign for that kind of thing so that we can look for any donor funder.
Are you satisfied with the preparation of the Lesotho government in addressing the challenges associated with the coronavirus or COVID-19 so far?
Yeah, it's not a question of satisfactory. As you know, Lesotho's economy is very poor. Really, we are looking for the donors all over the world because, you know, exactly, Lesotho is suffering a lot of things. We don't have a stable economy. We don't have anything that can be in place. We are trying, we are looking for all or for anyone who can assist us. Please, even if we can have anyone who can assist me as a chairperson of Africa, I would appreciate that for the sake of my people, for the sake of people of Lesotho. Seriously, I cannot say the government is doing enough or is not doing enough because I know the government is struggling, doesn't have money at all.
How are the people of Lesotho taking this news of the spread of the virus in neighboring countries that could possibly hurt the kingdom as well, particularly South Africa that has introduced a curfew?
Yes, as I said, people are starting to understand. That's why I even indicated that in terms of dissemination of information, really we don't have capacity to do that. We are trying to disseminate the information over the radios, doing press conferences on TVs, but Lesotho, as you know, is a mountainous country. Really, there's a lot of people which have not been reached. I think we need to make each and everyone to be aware of this. That's why I'm saying that if we can have a kind of software that which will be accessed by each and everyone who's using smartphone, I think the communication will be much better in that way. The army and the police force, they are ready to enforce that, the lockout. So as I've indicated that, they are ready to enforce the lockout, which I think if we can be very disciplined, if we can be very disciplined, then definitely I think we'll get through this. People will be safe, and then that's what I'm thinking. This challenge is not government responsibility alone. It's our responsibility as Basotho and everyone. It's our responsibility as all. It's the response of each and everyone in the world because we all need life. So we don't have to rely to the government alone. We as a people, leaders of the community leaders, and each and everyone who can be able to assist in a private sector. Because if you don't do that, you may find that we are missing a lot of lives in
Fako, so how is this going to be carried out, particularly when you have people who are poor and who might not be able to have the necessary means to survive within this 21-day period, as announced by the Prime Minister concerning a lockdown in an effort to combat the spread of the coronavirus in Lesotho?
Really, when it comes to that issue, Daddy, truly speaking, my tears are running on my cheeks, as you know exactly how Lesotho's economy has been affected so much. Really, the economy is so poor. So really, not talking about that, the issue of people which are not even to have anything to eat, have anything to drink, really, that is bad.
So did the government announce any measure to help the poor in this shutdown, which is set to begin on Monday?
Really, as far as I know, there's nothing in place so far. But what I know is that the government has announced that it has reserved something like 700 million for this COVID-19. But in terms of food, in terms of food packages for the poor, really, I don't have an idea on that. Maybe as time goes on, I'll try to find out from the government if there's something like that one. So, but I think it could be have already been announced if we have that kind of thing in place.
Fako Moshoeshoe is the chairperson for Lesotho's ruling All Basotho Convention Parliamentary Caucus. He spoke with me from the capital, Maseru. Meanwhile, Ugandan human rights groups and opposition political parties are hailing the decision of the Constitutional Court, which ruled against the Public Order Management Act. Judges of the court declared Section 8 of the law illegal and unconstitutional. Opposition and civil society groups say the government uses the law to suppress their fundamental rights, including preventing their meetings, gatherings, and campaigns. It remains unclear if the government will challenge the judgment at the Supreme Court. The ruling comes as the country readies for next year's general election. For more reaction, I reach Attorney Nicholas Opiu, Executive Director of Chapter 4, a civil society group which was part of the legal team that prepared the petition to challenge the Public Order Management Act.
Belated as the judgment has been, we are excited by it. This case was filed in 2013. It's taken all these years for it to be completed by the Constitutional Court. So we're excited with the outcome of the ruling. We are also very cautious because we know that the state of Uganda is known for violating or disregarding court orders. So we are excited but very cautious and then wait to see what the state will want to do with this case. There are sections of people who think they might appeal the judgment to the Supreme Court, but even if they appeal it, we think that they have no chance of winning. So we are very, very happy and very delighted by the outcome of the judgment.
What does this ruling mean to political parties, opposition groups, and civil society organizations in Uganda?
To the political parties in this country, especially at the time when we are going into the next general election, this court decision is very significant for them. All their activities in the past had been dispersed by the police acting under the now nullified law. So the political actors will now have the freedom to go out and mobilize the population. For the civil society organization, it also frees many individuals and organizations whose activities were interrupted and or who were facing trials under the Public Order Management Act. So many people will receive temporary reprieve, their cases will be dropped, and the political space will be open. If the state respects the ruling of the court, we think that it opens up the space for free expression, free assembly, and the participation of every Ugandan in the political affairs of our country.
What recourse do these individuals facing charges as a result of this law that was struck down have?
To the individuals who are facing trials under this nullified law, their lawyers will have to very quickly apply to the courts for an immediate discontinuation of their trials. Once these trials have been discontinued, they have the option of seeking redress against the state in a civil suit for wrongful or unlawful prosecutions. I also think that it opens up the space for the prosecutions of individual state officials who are involved in enforcing an unlawful law in the first place. But more significantly, I think that this law redefines the role of the police in this country, stating very clearly that the police's role is to ensure that everybody enjoys their rights, not one over the other, but everybody enjoys their rights, not only those who are close to the state, but even those who oppose the state.
How are Ugandans reacting to this decision from the Constitutional Court?
This judgment came out at a time when the country is facing the global pandemic caused by COVID-19 or the coronavirus. And so much of the country's attention is focused on addressing the scourge of this disease, of this virus. The ruling has only received very minimal attention from mainstream media, but also from the social media. But reports that we are getting to see now on Twitter, on Facebook, is that several people are excited about it. If it had come out at a time when we're not facing a pandemic, there would have been extensive public discussions. So at this time, the reactions are subdued as attention is shifted to addressing the scourge of COVID-19 that is ravaging the world.
You earlier on expressed concern that the government perhaps might appeal or even decide not to abide by the decision of the Constitutional Court. What happens then?
Well, first of all, this case arose from government's disregard of an earlier decision by the same court that nullified the powers of the police to control public assembly or to grant permission for public assemblies. The Constitutional Court nullified the Police Act, and government went ahead to reenact this law under the Public Order Management Act. So there's evidence of disregard of court decisions. But we think that this time, people are resolved in making sure that the decision of the court is followed. The number of violations we have seen over the years when this law was in place has been disheartening, has been disturbing to so many people. So people are resolved to enforcing this law, to making sure that government abides by the decision of the Constitutional Court.
Attorney Nicholas Opio is the executive director of Chapter 4, a civil society group which was part of the legal team that prepared the petition to challenge the Public Order Management Act. He spoke with me from the Ugandan capital, Kampala. Ugandan opposition group says the government appears to have delayed the implementation of measures to stop the spread of the coronavirus. The People Power Movement, led by popular parliamentarian and musician Bobby Wine, says the administration should be proactive. The party's remarks come after President Yoweri Museveni recently announced measures to control the spread of the disease. The party says the government should have acted sooner, but supporters of the government dismiss the criticisms as just politicking at the time when citizens need to unite to combat the spread of the disease. Joel Senyonyi, spokesperson for the People Power Movement, tells me the group expects the government to do more to protect the people irrespective of their political affiliation.
The coronavirus pandemic has begun to really bite here in Uganda. The confirmed cases have increased as of today. They are 18, and it's a worrisome situation. There's many other suspected potential cases. So what government has done, by and large, is to put in place restrictions, people to stay home, avoiding crowded places. Public transport has been put to a halt and all of that. And but by and large, yes, it's a welcome idea to tell people, look, keep home as much as you possibly can, avoid public places, crowded places, public transport, and all of that, such that we get to see that the spreading of the virus is halted in a way. So while that is the case, as you put in place restrictions, there are other things that any government should be able to put in place. And other governments have done so. You know, other governments have done so. We're not talking about just the rich governments, US and others, but even third world countries, Kenya, for example, and so on. Yes, you put in place restrictions, but then as a government, what are you doing for your people? What are you putting in place? Because this is a disaster situation. You know, other countries are putting in place things like tax waivers. We're not seeing that here because businesses are being hit hard since many of them have had to close. Uganda is, for example, you know, big on tourism. Tourism is one of our biggest export earners, but all the tourism companies have pretty much closed because there's no business there. A couple of other companies, you know, individuals that got loans from banks are struggling with that, you know. So we expect that beyond putting in place restrictions such that people don't move and spread the virus, our government should put in place things like tax waivers, you know, the question of interest rates on loans that should be visited. But also, truth be told, we have very vulnerable people in our communities who live hand to mouth every day. What they make is what they're able to eat. So if they can't leave their homes to go and make some money, they're going to starve. And so we expect that our government should treat this as a disaster and be able to avail some food portions for the very vulnerable people of our society. Hopefully that will happen. We have yet to hear any of that from our government.
Well, Joel, a lot of opposition and civil society groups have criticized the government for not being proactive enough to adequately prepare for the COVID-19 disease, particularly when neighboring countries were reporting cases of that nature, as well as letting others from high-risk countries to land in Entebbe and to mingle with the population. Do you think those criticisms are justified?
Truth be told, we saw this coming in every sense, because Uganda took quite a bit of time to register a case. You know, while the rest of the world was confirming cases, our neighbors, Kenya confirmed cases, Tanzania, Rwanda, Sudan, they all confirmed cases, and we had not confirmed any cases. So we knew without a doubt that this was beginning to knock at our door. But for some reason, the way our government operates, I don't know, there's little concern for certain things. It first hits you, then you begin to panic all over the place, you know, because we for example, the people that kept coming in, there's a plane that had some suspected cases, they let everybody go and they retained the passports. And so some of us kept wondering, wait a minute, is it the people that should be quarantined or the passports? Because you've kept the passports and let the people go. Very problematic. So many people have been, you know, reaching out to government saying, look, we were on that plane, you know, come reach out to us, test or whatever the case might be, and that's not been happening. And so there's laxity, which is very concerning. And that's not surprising, because our healthcare has not been paid attention to by our government. The reason is because the people in government, previously using taxpayers' money, would travel abroad for treatment to Germany, to the US and all of that. But now the thing about coronavirus, it is sadly saying it is an equalizer. So, you know, no one can travel abroad, even their high-ranking officials and so on. So the challenge is our healthcare system has been ailing for a very long time because it's not been paid attention to. And now here we all are faced with this challenge, and we were struggling to deal with it. Why? Because we have a bad healthcare system. I mean, even countries that have good healthcare systems are struggling. Now, how about us? It's very disturbing. It's very worrying. May God help us.
So supporters of the NRM are saying that what is the People Power Movement doing to sensitize Ugandans as well as help with the effort to reduce the spread of the disease?
That's an interesting question coming from NRM supporters. But I'll tell them what we have been doing so far. We have continuously done sensitization. We have done this on social media, on mainstream media, radios, TV stations, and so on, telling people what to do to keep safe and all of that. We are even doing it creatively. Our leader, Bobby Wine, has released a song which has gone viral, and the song talks about what people should do to keep themselves secure and safe from coronavirus and all of that. But also, since we know that our government is very dormant and has done little to reach out to people, we are doing the little that we can with the small means that we have, you know, buying things like water cans, soap for them to be able to wash up and remain clean. We're buying some foodstuffs, you know, for the very vulnerable people in our societies, because there's the really poor people whom government has ignored, you know. So we are trying to do all these different things with the little means that we do have. So my question to those NRM people is, why is your government so dormant and asleep at a time such as this one? It should be acting like any sane government should be doing. You know, people pay taxes for a government to operate, and they're doing little, if anything at all, about these things, and then they have the audacity to ask what we in the opposition are doing. Oh, come on.
What will the People Power Movement see happen now in the fight against the coronavirus, and what you want Ugandans to know about the fight against spreading the disease?
For starters, our continuous call to the people has been do the basics that the medical experts have been telling us. Wash your hands, clean with soap, sanitize, you know, with alcohol-based sanitizers with alcohol content of over 60%. Do eat right. If you do have any symptoms, you know, try and seek medical care. Stay home as much as you possibly can. Keep away from crowds and all of that. Keep a social distance. So all these things are important, and we hope that people can keep practicing them. And you know, reach out to those around you who you can be able to help. You know, for those who are waiting for government to come through, this government is dormant, doesn't care, it doesn't give a damn, it's not going to come through. Very sad, very unfortunate. So all we have is ourselves. So let's do everything we can to be a shoulder for each other.
Joel Senyonyi is the spokesperson for the Ugandan Opposition People Power Movement. He spoke with me from the capital, Kampala. In Eswatini, the National Public Service and Allied Workers Union, or NAPSAU, is calling for a total shutdown of the Southern African Kingdom. It says this could help to combat the spread of the coronavirus. Thulani Latswayu, the Secretary General of the group, says statistics show that if a total lockdown were effectively carried out, the coronavirus could be monitored and controlled in the kingdom. He expressed concern that the administration appears ill-prepared to implement measures to control the spread of the disease. His remarks come after neighboring countries, including South Africa, enforced shutdowns in an effort to control the spread of COVID-19. Latshwayo says the purchase of protective gear for frontline health workers is non-negotiable.
The reason we are calling for a total shutdown, it is because it has been detected, the first person to be detected in South Africa was on the 5th of March. And today, there are at 1,170 positive cases in South Africa. And yesterday, they recorded their first death. And in Swaziland, we do not have even the proper protective equipment. Government has said it and stated clear that they do not have money and they cannot afford the proper protective equipment for the healthcare workers, which are the essential services, that they too have ordered them to be on duty, whilst other governments will be partially out of duty.
Thulani, the government has said it doesn't have money to buy all the protective gear necessary to help in the fight against the spread of the disease. What is your organization saying about this?
This is our main concern, because if you talk about face masks and surgical gloves, that is the equipment that we have even before the coronavirus for the health workers and the emergency service workers. All we are calling government for is that these officers, hands on with the people who will be infected by the coronavirus, and whilst they're executing their duties, they are directly in contact with those people. And once they are infected with the clothing, the uniforms that they wear every day, they pick up the coronavirus. As we know, that coronavirus does stay on the clothes of a person for a period of about 12 hours. Then the next call that they will attend, they will even infect innocent Swazis. They too are in danger because they are taking the infection home to their children. So if we allow them to go to work only having the face mask and surgical gloves, they will be killing a lot of Swazis spreading the coronavirus, and they will be even killing their own families, Peter.
Thulani, the government is proposing that public sector workers run shift as part of the cost-saving measure. What is your group's reaction to that?
That is the main reason that has prompted us to call for total shutdown, Pete. We can see the other infected countries where coronavirus has taken a large number, and a large number of people are infected. It is because of the commuting. It is because of the public offices that are kept open. It is because of the big franchise malls where people are going out freely. And once people are starting to engage with others, they will spread the virus. And the virus escalates. Swaziland is a very small and poor country. We cannot even afford to buy ourselves medication. those people who will be going to work, and the numbers are rising, Peter, because of today we have nine confirmed positive Swazis with COVID-19. And then if they are carrying on to work, yet their services can be put on hold, a lot of Swazis would be infected in 2 weeks. South Africa, within 21 days, they had risen from 5 to 1,170. And those are our direct neighbors. So that is why we are calling for a total shutdown for all those departments that are not under essential services.
Thulani, some people are calling on your group to also sacrifice, since the government says it doesn't have the resources for the fight against the coronavirus. So they are asking for you to sacrifice so the resources will be used for the frontline workers. So what sacrifices is your group willing to make to help the government in this shutdown that you are demanding to fight the spread of the coronavirus?
We haven't objected to having the frontline health workers to report on duty. We are in agreement with government on that issue. The only thing that we are calling for government is that for the frontline workers, as you say, of now, you do not have enough money for the full proper protective clothing. Then let us see you running around looking for this equipment to provide to these workers. Because if they go to work in a week's time, in this country we have each shift working 16 hours, and a shift is carrying between 20 to 30 personnel. With one shift affected by coronavirus, and all of them, they can't be exposed to the virus in a single shift. How many officers will be having affected next week? How many officers are going to be infected? That is why what we are trying to prevent, that please look for the extra and the proper equipment for us to combat this coronavirus. It's nothing other than an isolation suits.
Thulani Tlachwayo is the Secretary General for the National Public Service and Allied Workers Union, NAPSAO. He spoke with me from the Eswatini capital in Mbabane.
Celebrate the sounds of Africa today, yesterday, and tomorrow. That's our mission in your show, Music Time in Africa. Hello, I'm your host, Heather Maxwell. Join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC and discover the best Pan-African music in the world. We play it all right here. Only the best on VOA.
This is the Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs, and music from our African collection. Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospect in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. Setting aside the questionable notion that black and brown people are less likely to be infected by the coronavirus pandemic, African governments and people must observe what is happening around the world and see how other governments and people are coping with this pandemic. It is true that at the present time, the incidence of the virus in Africa is very low. But so it is in Latin America and in the Caribbean. So this should not prevent governments and people to look and see, for example, how China handled the situation. When this virus broke out initially, China used what was termed a draconian measure to lock down a city of 11 million Wuhan and restrict movement of people, closing factories, closing schools. Now we know that these were good measures, and today the incidence of the virus is receding in China. We also see what happened in South Korea. South Korea presents another model. When South Korea was confronted with the spread of this virus, they embarked on massive testing of the population to determine who has or does not have the virus. Even though in the end, the number of affected South Koreans was small, at least the government was able to have a good picture on how best it could tackle the situation. Outside of China and South Korea, many Western countries felt these were draconian measures that they could not accept in a democratic situation. And they were slow to adopt these measures. But Italy presented another model of what slowness could entail. When it became very difficult to stop the spread of the virus in Italy, the government initially locked down northern Italy. But still, social movement continue and the spread of the virus continue. So the government was obliged to lock down the entire country of Italy, and is still locked down. And now they are trying to see how best they can control the virus. It is because of the high incidence of the virus in Italy in particular that WHO announced last week that Europe is now the epicenter of the virus and no longer China. We have seen also that Spain is encountering difficulties, yet many European governments are working on the plan of containment and mitigation, but many predict that they may have to move more towards the Italian model. The United States present a different situation. The U.S. is a complex society, and controlling it has proved to be difficult. It is only in recent days that the federal government has started working with the state governments to handle the situation of the spread of the virus. And schools have been closed, sports have been postponed. And these are things are just at the beginning. And many believe things will get worse before they get better. What is happening in Tehran will be more similar to what may happen in Africa. Tehran, or Iran, has been under a campaign of maximum military and economic pressure. And because of that, its economy is at a very low ebb and is not in the position to cope with the virus. This may account for the fact that it is increasing very high in Tehran. Iran has just requested the IMF for a loan of $11 billion to be able to cope with this virus. But the government is worried that the U.S. might use its veto power in the IMF to block it. Just a few days ago, President Ping of China committed China to help Iran deal with the issue of the virus. Now, in Africa, we said there are some numbers of the incidents, but mostly in northern Africa near the Mediterranean. That is understandable because it's near to Europe. but governments should embark on massive civic education to let the people understand what would happen if, in any event, the virus should spread in the African continent. This may be the time when perhaps mythology may be better than reality, and hopefully the African continent might be spared this pandemic. I thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. It's Sunday on Nightline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect, a flashback with music from the continent.
Was
And that was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoy the music from Nightline Africa here at the English service of the Voice of America in Washington. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we are on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, managing editor Shaka Sali, producer Douglas Mpuga, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, one who eats alone cannot describe the taste of the food to others. I'm your host, Peter Clotter in Washington. Good evening, Africa.